Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast where I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. My guest tonight, or today, whenever you're listening, is Colin Donnell. Colin, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me, Scott.
It is a pleasure. So, Colin, tell the people a little bit about yourself.
I'm an iOS developer. I currently live in San Francisco. I've made a lot of apps. I have a blog and a Twitter. Ooh. That's kind of me.
Well, what's your?
I like.
You like to tweet. Mm-hmm. What is your Twitter handle so people can find you?
It's Colin Donnell.
Oh, I'd imagine.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's like a consistent brand, you know. I have to make sure that my namespace is, you know, brand identified.
Makes sense. That's why I have Blank Baby on every social networking site in existence.
Yeah, that's how I lifejack my brand hacks.
See, I think we might pivot Random Trek into lifejacking brand hacks, and just talk about that for an hour. How do you feel about that?
You know what? It's your thing.
Well, how about we not talk about that then?
Okay, good.
We'll pivot back to Star Trek. So, would you consider yourself a Star Trek fan?
I would consider myself a Star Trek fan. Correct.
I didn't realize we were entering the quiz portion. I'm glad I got that right. So, on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being a passing knowledge of Star Trek, 10 being I have dressed up as a character and gone to a convention, where would you rate yourself on the spectrum of Star Trek fans?
7, maybe? Oh. 7 or 8.
Okay.
I've never dressed up as anything, but, you know, like, I think I've seen every episode of every series at least once.
That's a solid showing. I myself have never dressed up as anything either. But I host the Star Trek podcast, so I feel like that's kind of comparable. And I do like Star Trek. So tell me, you've seen all the episodes of every series, and I'm assuming all the movies. What, if you had to pick a favorite series, what series would you pick? What's your go-to Star Trek series?
You know, I was thinking that, so here's what I was thinking, is that since I just rewatched both of them all the way through recently, that Deep Space Nine might be my favorite, but it may be sort of tied with Next Generation. But I think Deep Space Nine is probably my favorite, but I sort of think Next Generation is kind of the best. Hmm. As far as, like, it just seems like it's everything a Star Trek series should be. Like, it's all there. It doesn't have, like, some of the, like, really outstanding moments, I think, that, like, the Deep Space Nine has, but, like, there's not too much to be offended by there as far as, like, a Star Trek episode, as far as, like, a Star Trek series would be. Like, the prototypical Star Trek series, or whatever.
Well, that's true, and I think that it's because it kind of perfected the formula that the original series laid out. And kind of updated it, obviously, for the 90s. And it does have, of course, a spaceship right from the beginning, a starship. Don't write me letters, nerds. A starship, as opposed to Deep Space Nine, which is obviously on a space station for the first couple seasons, and then they come in with the Defiant because they realize we really need to move these characters around because it's kind of boring on the space station. Though I love Deep Space Nine, and it is probably my favorite. I think it is, much like you're saying, I think it's the best series. But I think, as I've said many times before, that my favorite series is The Next Generation, because that's the first Star Trek that I was exposed to. So, continuing theory, is that why you would pick The Next Generation? Is that the first kind of series that you imprinted with?
I think it might be kind of a toss-up for me, or if anything, we might be slightly reversed on that. And that I think maybe Deep Space Nine is my favorite, but I think Next Generation is the best. I think we may be slightly reversed, but it's really a toss up for me.
So what about let's talk about characters then from the Next Generation. Mm-hmm. Who's your favorite Next Gen character?
I think probably Data, because maybe this is a weird reason to say, but I think it must have just been so much fun to film that show with him. Because, like, I think they realized that he was like kind of a great actor, like at like 3 or 4 seasons in at some point, and they start giving him all kinds of weird stuff to do,
mm-hmm.
you know, like kind of physical comedy sort of stuff almost. And I kind of think I kind of love that.
And that's kind of the same thing that happened. So we're going to be talking about an original series episode, which people who are listening to this podcast already know, Devil in the Dark, first season, episode 26. And when they first started the original series, they thought the breakout character, of course, would be William Shatner as Captain Kirk,
mm-hmm.
Because he's handsome, he's the dashing hero, and he's the main actor, right? And they thought, CBS executives thought that nobody would like Spock because he's kind of devilish looking and he's cold and logical. And so it turned out, of course, that people, of course, people love Captain Kirk, but people went crazy for Spock. And I think the same thing kind of happened in The Next Generation. I'm not sure if the producers thought that nobody would like Data. They probably were pretty sure people would like Data. But people, I think, have a very strong affinity for Data because he's mm-hmm. a very similar character as Spock. And I think people feel like they're both kind of outsiders. They both kind of judge yet want to be mm-hmm. human. And so people can relate to that kind of, I'm an outsider, but I want to be part of the group. And it's all this thing that, you know, speaks to your inner turmoil.
Yeah, and they're kind of like they're kind of like two sides of the same thing though too, right? Because like Data wants to be, Data has no feelings, but he wants to be more human.
Mm-hmm.
And Spock sort of like, I don't know, he's always sort of talking, you know, he'll always say things like when people say he's being human, he takes that as like an insult, you know, like
in this very episode he takes that as an
yeah.
insult because Spock is Spock. Spock's gonna mm-hmm. Spock, as the kids say. I don't think the kids say that.
No, correct. They do.
I'm 2 for 2 on the quiz. I'm very excited about this. So we've talked about favorites. So the top two series for you, mm-hmm. TNG, DS9. So now I have to ask, least favorite series.
I think
there is a correct answer.
I think that there's... Yeah, so I think that Enterprise is like maybe the obvious like worst series, mm-hmm. but I think I sort of dislike Voyager more, and I can say why is that Chakotay with all of his like made up like I'm pretty sure that they did not have like a Native American like consultant mm-hmm. you know like consultant. I think they just treated it like Native American is like another kind of alien and they just made things up as they needed it. That really kind of bothers me with all his like Akuchimoya stuff. It mm-hmm. feels really gross to me.
Yes.
And I think they toned that down in like the third or fourth season, but it really it was like every one or two episodes they did it for like the first 2 or 3 seasons. And it really rubbed me the wrong way.
Yeah, I was puzzled. I like Chakotay as a character idea. And mm-hmm. on Voyager, there aren't a lot of good characters to go around. Janeway, obviously, is a good character. I like her. I shouldn't say
Janeway's great.
I like her. The Doctor is a great character. Seven of Nine mm-hmm. is a great character. And then you quickly run out of even good characters. I mean, it's a big step down from Seven of Nine to the next character.
I would agree with that wholeheartedly. I think like those three characters make the whole thing like worth watching, but like it can be really painful when one of them isn't like there. When it's like a Chakotay or like a Neelix episode or something.
Oh yeah, those are never good. And I think they missed the big opportunity they missed with Voyager. Well, there are many opportunities they missed with Voyager, but the biggest one or one of the biggest character opportunities is making Chakotay actually authentic, as opposed to just making up all this kind of spiritual Native American stuff that he does that has no basis in any reality. Except maybe you feel like they saw some kind of old Western and they decided, mm-hmm. hey, we really need to put some of this spiritual stuff in here. So let's spiritualize it up. People get a lot of Native American stuff, maybe some topaz and some silver.
Mm-hmm.
Lucid
and that,
dreaming.
That weird thing he can use to lucid dream with.
Yes.
And he says Akuchi Moya so much. Like, however much you're thinking it is, it's a lot more. Quick funny story, though, about Chakotay is that I was at a, like, meetup thing here in town a couple weeks ago, at a bar, and I met somebody where I don't know, the topic of Star Trek came up for some reason, I think by me. And I started talking to this guy, and the topic of Chakotay sucking came up also, probably by me.
Well, there you go.
And the guy, like, no joke, and I don't think he was making it up because he knew the actor's name, was like, oh, I'm friends with him. Like, I know him. Like, yeah, he kind of feels that way too, like, or whatever. But he knew the actor's name, and I don't remember it right now, but I remember, like, it being, like, very, like, yes, that's him. And I thought I could either, like, step back there and be like, oh, well, you know, I mean, he has some good parts, or I could, like, double down. And I think I kind of went with doubling down. I'm like, yeah, no, it's bad. Like, he agrees it's bad, right? And he's like, yeah, he's not as into it as, like, the guy who played Geordi or whatever. LeVar Burton,
that dude. Yeah. Yes. Or Tim Russ, actually, who played Tuvok, seems really into being Tuvok. Who is also kind of, I mean, Tuvok is not an offensive character on Voyager.
Mm-hmm.
He just is a boring, non-memorable character in my book, sadly. But luckily for you, we did not watch a Voyager episode, which is also lucky for me because I tend to accidentally call Chakotay Chipotle, which is unfortunate. I think I spent a whole episode of Random Trek calling him Chipotle totally by accident. once you get that Chakotay Chipotle thing in your head, it's hard to keep it straight. But luckily there are no burritos and no Chakotays in Devil in the Dark.
I'll have a Chakotay bowl, please.
That's right. They're delicious. I would like double chicken in my Chakotay bowl. But there's and no chicken also in Devil in the Dark. Devil in the Dark is, I feel like I say this every time, there's been a rash of the original series episodes being chosen by the random Star Trek episode picker. And I feel like every time it picks one, I say this, but it has just been picking good original series episodes. This is one of the kind of most memorable episodes of the original series. It's like a quintessential original series episode. Everybody who knows Star Trek vaguely knows what the Horta is, and if they see it, they think, oh, that's from that episode of Star Trek. They may not remember the name, they may not know anything about the episode, but they know what the thing is. There's even a Hallmark ornament of Spock mind-melding with the Horta. That's how iconic the Horta is.
Now, a beautiful beast.
It is a beautiful beast. I have read a book called These Are the Voyages, which chronicles the making of all of the season one episodes of Star Trek, and the guy has done a season two and season three book. And so this is a season one episode, and it is in the book. And so I recommend people going out and getting it because it's a good book. I don't know why you would go out and get it, just buy it on the internet. But he talks about a couple of things that I did not notice as I was watching it for the first time, or the first several times, because I've seen this episode probably hundreds of times. But so it's set in this mining colony, right? And it's set in the mines. The bulk of this episode happens in these mines. And he points out that all of the mines have very smooth floors, as though they were studio floors, because in fact they are studio floors. And they decided they had to do that on purpose. They, you know, when they were making the episode, they thought, well, maybe we should, you know, put a bunch of rough surface on the floor and make it look like it's a subterranean thing. Because I think that considering it was the 60s, I think the sets look really good. But they couldn't do that because the dude, the Horta, is a dude in a suit who is basically crawling on the floor, right? So he couldn't maneuver over any kind of rough terrain. So it had to be all flat, which I find a nice little detail.
It's a space mine. They have phasers and stuff.
Exactly. That's what I thought as well. That they just have smooth floors because of the phasers.
I did notice on the on only just this viewing of this episode that the tunnels look an awful lot like some kind of like cellophane material with visible ribbing on the outside of it.
Just a little bit. And that's, did you watch it in like the remastered HD version?
Yeah, on a 70-inch TV too. So it really shows up.
This is, time has not been kind to the visual effects, especially since they went back and remastered them. And every time we talk about the original series, I put in a plug for the Blu-rays, but the Blu-rays are beautiful. So if you have a Blu-ray player, check them out. They're fantastic. Even though you do see some of the scenery looking not so convincing. But they
and
have,
also,
they redid the special effects. They look very nice, like the matte painting they swapped out for the mining colony. It looks great. But what do we hop right into the episode because I don't have any more production trivia. So we will go into what the heck this is about. Oh, actually, I do have another piece of trivia because Memory Alpha, my source of all things Star Trek, points out that this is one of the only episodes, or maybe the only episode of the original series, in which the teaser, there is no recurring character and the Enterprise is not featured at all. And that's because in the teaser, we are introduced to these miners who are on Janus 6, which is a planet that is apparently just full of delicious minerals and seemingly no native population. And I guess it doesn't have an atmosphere because everybody lives underground and the miners...
It's a treasure house, he says.
Exactly.
It's just minerals.
Full of minerals, delicious, lovely minerals, platinum and rare earth minerals and all kinds of things. And so they are, we are introduced to a character named Schmitter, who you could just tell by looking at him, he is not long for this world. He has replaced someone who's guarding, something down in the mines. And the chief of this mining planet, who's a chief engineer, is like, you know, you really have to, guard this thing because people are disappearing. And one of my great plan is to post lone sentries around these mines, isolated from everyone else.
And Schmitter's like, no, boss. I feel like literally as soon as the rest of you leave this room, I'm going to die a horrible death. Like, that's kind of how it's feeling to me right now. He's like, no, you'll be fine. Like, stop worrying. I mean, the other guy is literally still flaming in a pile on the ground here, but you'll be fine.
It's true. And then they make to leave, and Schmitter's like, I heard the Enterprise is coming. Maybe I can get you guys to stay longer just by talking about the Enterprise. Let's talk about the Enterprise a little bit. Vanderberg, who's the chief, is like, yeah, they're coming, but you stay here. You'll be fine, Schmitter. Nothing's going to happen to you. You have a name. It'll be cool.
Yeah, nobody with a name dies.
No. And then so they leave. Schmitter gets an extreme close-up. He looks around a little bit. He looks horrified. He screams. Everybody comes running back. Schmitter's dead. And that is the... He's a pile of ashes on the floor.
Yeah.
Dead. Poor Schmitter. We knew him well.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of the episodes in which we find out that in the future, everybody...
Not a Schmitter-heavy episode.
Yes.
Yeah.
In the future that everyone wears a jumpsuit that is color-coded. So apparently if you're the chief, you wear like a, what is it, an orange jumpsuit, and everybody else wears yellow jumpsuits, or it's the other way around. I don't know.
Yeah, also, if you're the chief, you get some epic eyeshadow.
Well, it's your right as chief to apply as much makeup as you like. It gets very lonely on the mining planet.
I agree. I think he looks great.
Yeah, he does. He looks pretty good. I don't know if a jumpsuit is the most flattering for his physique. it would not be for me as well, so I'm not casting aspersions on him. I certainly would not parade around in a jumpsuit, but he pulls it off. He has an air of dignity, so he can pull it off. Wouldn't look good on me, though. So then we fast forward 2 days. The Enterprise arrives. Spock and Kirk beam down with McCoy, and they figure out... They beam down to Vandenberg's, well, outside of Vandenberg's office. They talk a little bit about why they're there. Then some random dude shows them to Vandenberg's office, and in they go. And he tells them about what's happening, that there's some monster is killing his people, and it's hurting their per diem production, which apparently is a very important thing that powers power plants in all the system or something.
If they could only harness it here, it would power thousands of planets.
That's true. They couldn't. Yeah. They can't because they don't have the technology or sufficient technology to mine all the pergium that is available. So they can only do it a little bits. And this chief, he has a pretty nice office. At some point, he's complaining about the new tunnels that they've opened, and he walks over to this kind of like, I don't even know how to describe it, like a wall-mounted map case, I guess, and he pulls out like a paper map, which I just found very amusing, with a map of all the tunnels. And I also found it even more amusing because they make him walk over there and pull out the map, and then he doesn't talk about the map at all. And I thought, why did you pull out the map if you're not going to talk about it?
I'm also pretty sure they refer to there being thousands of tunnels in this mine at some point, and there's like there's like maybe like two dozen on that map.
It's not maybe a highly detailed map.
No, it's not. It's not high resolution, I wouldn't say. No.
But there's another thing that I find odd about Vanderberg's office, and then I will stop obsessing about it. Seemingly, the door is controlled by a secret button under his desk. Because he presses it every time someone needs to leave or come in, he presses this little button and the door opens.
That's not where you keep your door control?
No, I just keep it on the door. I find it's easiest to find it that way. But maybe, so here's where you fill in the gaps. Not that this is a big plot point. The door button never comes up. But maybe this is a rough and tumble mining colony. So he needs to have his office secure. So he has the button there. So at any moment, he can close the door in case there's trouble. That's how I'm explaining it.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds good enough. So, this is a 50-minute. Let's just talk more about this door, because I'm sure people are loving it.
Welcome to Random Door.
That's right. I'll stop talking about the door now. But so we find out that 50 people have died because of this mysterious monster. And it has happened recently, like 3 months ago, apparently, they opened a new mine, and then all of a sudden, people were dying. They don't seem to connect the dots at all, because also 3 months ago, they started finding these silicon nodules that look like eggs. But right off the bat, even the first time I saw this episode, I thought, that's an egg.
Did Spock, though. Like, he seems to... Mm-hmm. He jumps to, these are silicon-based life form eggs. Sorry, spoilers. These are silicon, it came out 50 years ago, it's fine. It's okay. These are silicon-based life form eggs. Like, he seems to jump to that, like, as soon as he sees them.
Yes, because they're trying to figure out, well, what could have done this? And Kirk is like, well, let's, what do our life form sensors pick up? And Spock is like, well, nothing other than the humans that we would expect to find here. Unless this is some kind of life form heretofore unknown to us, perhaps based on silicone. And Dr. McCoy has a big problem with this. He's like, that's crazy. You don't know what you're talking about, Spock. That can't even happen. And certainly
not in an oxygen atmosphere. Right, I mean, obviously.
Clearly. Spock is like, well, I think maybe we should not rule it out. And that's when he sees this nodule on Vanderberg's desk, and he's like, hey, what is this? And Vanderberg's like, we just find them all over the place. They're nothing worthwhile.
And clearly it's an egg because it's circular.
That's right. That's all eggs are circular.
Uh-huh.
And Spock thinks that this is an egg. And Kirk is like, well, what do you think this thing is, Spock? And Spock says, well, I've given McCoy enough ammunition to make fun of me, so I'll keep my opinion to myself.
Yeah, he uses some kind of fancy college word there, though, that I didn't remember.
I didn't write it down.
I didn't either.
Spock is using all kinds of fancy words all the time.
Yeah.
I did think it was a little out of character for him not to share his conjecture with Captain Kirk, but...
He'd rather endanger everyone in the colony than give Bones something to than give one thing to Bones.
That's right. He doesn't want to get. He's had enough of being mocked by McCoy. And then they spend a lot of time talking about the differences between Phaser Type 1 and Phaser Type 2, and how the miners only have Phaser Type 1s, but the Enterprise.
But the way they say it is so much better than that, because they don't say phaser 1 or phaser 2 like quickly. They're like, the miners have phaser number 1, but we have phaser number 2. And they say phaser number 1, phaser number 2, like, I don't know, eight times in like 40 seconds. It's that dialogue, I think, right there, phaser number 1, phaser number 2, is golden. It's my favorite part of the episode.
That is probably the most stilted pieces of dialogue in all of Star Trek, the original series, possibly. Because that whole conversation is just awful. I
think they're drinking space coffee also while they're there too, right? They have the little silver space coffee cups.
They
had to reuse that prop.
Yes. Which, oddly enough, the Squire of Gothos, or Gothos, actually, which may be the episode before this or a couple episodes before this of Random Trek, those same space coffee cups play a part. So the
major plot point.
It's a big plot point. Space coffee cups and door controls are very important in Star Trek. Mm-hmm. And paperwork, as we find out in the Squire of Gothos. No paperwork in this episode, though.
And that's when I checked out.
Yeah,
why aren't we signing anything here? This is garbage.
Lame. So it turns out that the Phaser Type 2, as we find out, are more powerful than Phaser Type 1s. So they beam down a bunch of security guards from the Enterprise who have Phaser Type 2s in the hopes that it can hurt whatever monster is terrorizing the poor miners, or who are actually probably quite wealthy, of Janus 6. They look around in the tunnels a bit to see what's going on. McCoy actually analyzes good old Schmitter's remains and says they weren't burned but corroded. So that's a little thing to find out. We find out later that this thing, whatever this thing is, it's exuding corrosive acid. But who knows? And then suddenly...
Who knows?
Who knows? Nobody knows. We'll find out in like 10 seconds. Suddenly there's an alarm because something... i.e. the monster, has broken into the nuclear reactor, killed the guard. There was one guard in front of the nuclear reactor. Really, I think they should have had buddy system, but they don't.
Why would you you know, if they did use the buddies, I think in every series of Star Trek, if they actually used the buddy system, it would really, like, you know, Starfleet isn't a well-trained, organized set of people.
It really isn't.
They make, you know, I think if they use the buddy system, there wouldn't really need to be a show because they would solve almost every problem through use of just the buddy system.
It is true. Because at the very least, one of them may die, and that would be tragic, but the other could explain what happened, so it would solve many problems. But sadly, the poor schmo who drew the short stick to guard the reactor dies in much the same way as Schmitter. And then Kirk and Spock and Vanderberg all run down to the nuclear reactor room to see what happened. There's this big hole in the door, which they go through. Well, actually, Vanderberg just jumps through. Spock and Kirk take a moment and look at it. And Kirk, for some reason, like a child, decides his first instinct, touch it to see what's going on.
To see how the corrosive material feels
yes.
on his soft, delicate human skin.
And luckily Spock is there to say, you should not touch that, Captain, because that's stupid. And so he doesn't. But then they quickly have to duck into the hole so they can check out what's happened in the nuclear reactor. And here's where I think... So here's a spoiler alert for me. I like this episode. I think it's a classic episode because the story is good. You know, the whole... here's a big spoiler alert. The humans are the monsters, not the Horda at the end.
The devils in the dark.
Exactly. Are the humans.
Yeah. Deep.
Which is a nice little twist. But this part really makes little sense. So the Horta, which we know later, has no hands or arms or any kind of limbs. Burns.
I was wondering.
The door. Yes, he burns through the door, which that makes sense. Or she, it probably. I don't know what the sex is.
She.
Yes, they do call her mother later, so I guess she's she. Burns through the door. Okay, that's fine. Corrosive acid, it can burn through stuff. Burns through a part of the nuclear reactor. Okay, fine. You can burn through stuff. That's cool. But then it steals a part from the nuclear reactor and then runs away with it. And I have no idea how it could actually do that.
You know, I'm willing to accept that there's parts of Horta physiology that we don't see on camera here that would allow that. I really don't understand why it would take it and be like, you know, I'm going to take this in case I decide to give it back later for some reason.
It would be much easier just to corrode it.
Yeah.
Because that's
she got all the way there, and she's like, "No, I'm, you know, just in case a handsome, just in case a handsome captain convinces me,
asks me nicely to have it back."
Mm-hmm.
So that's my first problem with this. The second problem is, okay, so the colony has been there for 50 years, apparently. Their nuclear reactor is old. The Enterprise doesn't have any spare parts for it because it's an old, outmoded thing. But this is the most, they say later, this is like the most important part in the nuclear reactor. And the colony does not have any backup for it at all. Seems like poor colony planning.
No, I don't understand why would you even do that? You're not making sense.
I know. Vandenberg's like, we need air. This thing creates our life support systems and all of our power, and we only have one of these parts that's incredibly important. And we have all this money from all our mining operations, but we never thought to buy an extra one of these parts.
Or some phaser number twos.
Or phaser number twos. Or maybe just upgrade the nuclear reactor to something more recent. No, they don't do
it. Or more flattering jumpsuits. Or,
I think first line item, if I were a chief engineer, more flattering jumpsuits. I would even say no jumpsuits. Maybe a uniform of some kind. No jumpsuits.
Okay, that's – yeah, my head jumped to the wrong place there for a second. Yeah. No jumpsuits, but like other clothing.
Yes. You can wear non-jumpsuit clothing. That's not to say if people out there who love wearing jumpsuits, I'm not judging. I just don't think they're flattering on me.
I call it a speed suit.
That's right. So they don't have a replacement, but they have Scotty, right? Scotty can fix anything. Except apparently this part. He says, well, I can jury rig something. It's not going to last very long.
It'll work 48 hours.
48 hours, which is, as Captain Kirk points out, better than nothing.
Yeah, but here's the other thing. It does not last 48 hours.
No, not even close.
It seems to last more like 48 minutes, maybe.
Yes, at best. And Scotty's a pretty good engineer, so this thing must be super outmoded. Who knows? So now we have introduced, I understand from a story perspective why this is introduced, because now they need to find this part or else everybody dies. So Captain Kirk's like, okay, everybody beam up to the Enterprise. Vandenberg's like, we're not beaming up to the Enterprise. We're going to stay here, and we're going to help you find this monster. And Captain Kirk's like, none of your weapons work. And he says, I don't care. We will use clubs. And Captain Kirk's like, okay.
I guess clubs are – I think that if they're considering clubs to be like a viable alternative – it really tells us just how crappy phaser number one actually is.
That's right. 'Cause it goes in the hierarchy of weapons, apparently. It is phaser number one, club, phaser number two. So you really just don't bother with phaser number one, people.
It seems like a waste of money.
It does. Well, that's what I think we found out, that the chief engineer Vandenberg is probably a great engineer, but a poor colony administrator. He doesn't know how to allocate funds properly to buy the right equipment, including the right phasers and the right backup nuclear reactor parts. And he has no fashion sense. So I would vote him out. Vote McNulty for next chief engineer. That's what I'm saying. And so they go off to find the part, and they assume, because it makes pretty good sense, that whatever this monster is has stolen away the part, so they need to find the monster and the part. They spread out the security team that beams down, who have phaser number twos, and Spock has adjusted them all to be more effective against silicon.
They are set for silicon.
That's right, which is good. And Kirk says, "Okay, we've got to kill this thing." Spock doesn't really want to kill it. He says, this is probably the only – and oh, yeah, Spock scans the area, and he only finds one life form, one silicon-based life form. And he says, this is such a unique scientific thing. It would be a crime against science if we were to kill it. And Kirk says, we're killing it.
Nope, killing it. Yeah. It's lucky that a part of their mission isn't to seek out new life and whatnot. Like, it seems like this is right – I don't know. I felt like this is right in the charter. They're like – seek out new life and kill it.
Well, it just says seek out new life. It doesn't say what you do with it.
I guess that's true. They don't really specify what you do once you find it.
So they have found new life, and now they have to do something with it.
I mean, this life was theoretically impossible like 2 hours ago, and now they found it.
Now they found it, and now it's time to kill it. Which makes sense. That's the progress you go through. And so one of the security teams encounters the Horta. He gets off a shot. Actually, I don't think he gets a shot. But he gets killed before he could even shoot his phaser. Somebody shoots the phaser. Oh, I guess some other people come around the corner, shoot a phaser at it, knock a piece off of it. Spock.
I think it's Spock and isn't it Spock and Kirk? Don't they shoot it together and a piece falls off?
Oh, yes,
of it?
They do. They do.
I think they say they took a bite out of it.
They did take a bite out of it. So it leaves a little thing. They check out the thing. The little square of Horta. And they confirm Spock's suspicions that it is a silicon-based life form, which everybody's excited about. Actually, nobody's excited about it except for Spock. Everybody else wants to
Spock
kill
is stoked, though.
He is very excited.
I was pretty excited, too, because like I had that figured out within 3 minutes of this episode starting. So I felt pretty smart, too.
Well, see, there you go. They go looking for this monster again. They find Kirk and Spock are the buddy team. They do the buddy system up until the point at which they find two tunnels. And Kirk says, well, there are two tunnels. There are two of us. Let's split up. And Spock says, do you think that's a good idea? And Kirk's like, well, there are two tunnels and there are two of us. So let's split up. And that's what they do. And Kirk finds himself in a giant chamber full of a bunch of silicone nodules, which are eggs. Spock says, oh, don't break them. I have a theory that I'm not going to tell you about. And then...
Really keeping it close to the vest.
He does. Spock does not.
Bones isn't even here anymore.
Well, he's on the same comm band, so he doesn't want Bones to break in and say, that's a ridiculous theory, Spock.
You think... Because that's how much of a dick Bones actually is. He's just listening.
Yes.
To
he's
see
just
if,
waiting.
If,
I know Spock is up at three levels below with some harebrained scheme, and I'm going to... He's like Spock is the Lucy to his Ricky. He always wants to be in the show, and McCoy's like, no, you can't be in the show. Kirk finds these nodules. He goes into this chamber. All of a sudden, the roof collapses, trapping Captain Kirk. Although Captain Kirk is not trapped because there's a tunnel that connects later, so he can actually get out of this... chamber. Spock is very concerned. He's like, do you want me to phaser blast through the rubble? Kirk is like, no, I can just walk through the other tunnel. Don't worry.
I that's true, because they were actually leading to the same place. But and he also says he's very disquieted by the fact that the tunnel collapsed just then.
Mm-hmm.
Because we also could see the Horta pushing down the rocks on top.
Right.
To yeah.
So this was a Horta trap.
It was the Horta. Yeah, it was a Horta collapse tunnel situation.
As is so often the case on this planet.
As in life.
As in life, it's true. I can't tell you how many chambers I've gone into that have been collapsed by the Horta, metaphorically speaking. So Spock says, well, I sense through my tricorder, not through like his Vulcan senses, that the Horta is nearby. And we cut to Captain Kirk, who is mere feet from the Horta, who says, yes, I know exactly where the Horta is. Spock is like, well, where is it? And Kirk says, it's right next to me. And Spock is like, whoa, that's crazy. I'm paraphrasing. And so Kirk and Spock are reunited. The Horta is kind of, you know, not being unfriendly. It's just kind of hanging out.
I think he's kind of doing the, like, I sort of know what phaser number two is about dance right now. And also, you know, Kirk tried to talk to him a little bit. The Horta didn't really seem to get that too well.
I don't know. Well, I mean, I don't know if the Horta can hear.
It's unclear. You don't really have ears. But luckily, Spock knows about the Vulcan, the Vulcan method of merging two minds.
He does. And he decides to do it on the Horta, the mind meld, that is.
On the silicon rock creature.
Yes, which apparently works. It does work. Spock senses that the Horta is in great pain, which makes sense because they shot it.
I think he just screams pain for a while. Is most of that scene.
He forcibly stops his mind meld because it's so much pain. And then the Horta, which is probably the most famous. Well, there are a couple famous scenes in this episode. The most famous probably is this scene where the Horta then uses its corrosive ability to etch in the stone, "No kill eye."
And they're like, and I think the first thing Kirk says, like, what does that mean? Does it mean not kill him? Does it mean he's not going to kill us? I'm like, no, I think it's like fairly self-explanatory. Like, you're not I, you know. At which point Spock makes the point that the Horta's clearly learn their language just based on the brief interaction, which is lucky he didn't write it in Vulcan, I guess.
Well, at least Spock would be there, so he could read it.
That's true. It wouldn't have really... It would have been okay.
Yes,
would have been confusing for us.
Yes, it would have. It wouldn't have had as much punch for the English reading audience if it were a bunch of Vulcan glyphs. Although it would have been interesting. They should, if they release them in whatever physical media replaces Blu-ray, they should have the special effects in which they change it to Vulcan glyphs. CBS, call me. I think it's a great idea. So Kirk,
if there was a Wikipedia page or Memory Alpha page on Vulcan alphabet, which I'm pretty sure there isn't, I can guarantee you I would read that.
There might be. I don't know. If only there were a way to find out. So it is clear the Horta is injured. So what do you do when there's an injured creature? You call a doctor. So Kirk calls McCoy. McCoy, once again, not a big fan of the Horta and not too interested in helping the Horta. Kirk really has to say, this thing is injured, it's a patient, fix it. And this is where Dr. McCoy utters the famous line, "I'm a doctor, not a bricklayer." Which is, according to Memory Alpha, the first time that that phrase, "I'm a doctor, not a blank," is uttered in Star Trek history. Not the last.
Oh, is it really?
Yes.
Yeah, because I noticed. I thought, that's a good one.
It is
like
a good
that, one. I like that one, yeah.
It works. But it turns out Dr. McCoy actually is a pretty good bricklayer. Because
he could cure a rainy day.
He could cure a rainy day. He is very impressed with his own skills, as a matter of fact. Figures out that they have this, silicone building material that they use to build, like, huts or something. I don't know what. And he has them beam down a bunch to wherever he is, to someone on the Enterprise who seems incredulous. Dr. McCoy's like, just beam it down, damn it.
Don't ask me what I need it for, Lieutenant.
That's right. I'm a doctor. You're a lieutenant. Just do what I tell you.
Apparently the silicone hut-making material is under really tight guard.
That's right. Well, there's like four forms I need to fill out. Are you sure you need this? Can I send something else down? He trowels it on. It heals the wound. McCoy is very pleased with himself. But actually, I skip over one part. There, while this is happening, and Spock and Kirk and McCoy are communing with the Horta, and it is clear that the Horta doesn't mean them any harm, and we're not sure what the Horta is, what it's motivated by, although we all know it's because they're destroying their eggs. There is a bunch of surly, jumpsuited miners tussling with some Federation guards. So the Starfleet guards are like, the captain told you had to stay out here. And the miners are like, the monster's in there. We want to kill it.
Yeah, and I think he calls Kirk, the red shirt does, and he's like, Captain, there's some guys out here who look like they're coming, who they want to, there's a surly mob out here who looks like they want to mob around in the room you're in. Should I let them through? And he's like, no, like, why are you calling me with this?
You're a security officer. This is like the first thing.
You know, we let you be in charge of this one away team as like a trial. I'm going to tell you, this is not, you know, this is like a C-minus performance.
That's right. You really have to work on your initiative.
Yeah.
But it turns out the surly mob is not calmed by the stern talking to that the Starfleet security guard gives them. And they are also, as we remember from earlier, armed with clubs. Which are, you know, useless against the Horta, but quite useful against security Starfleet security officers. And they basically beat them unconscious, and then the mob rushes in to the Horta. And as the mob is coming, this is when we find out Spock mind melds with the Horta again to find out the deets about why the Horta is so upset. And we find out that every 50,000 years or something, all the Horta die except for one. And this last Horta is in charge of the Chamber of the Ages, which is where they have all of their eggs that take a while to hatch. And the miners kind of busted in and started breaking all the eggs for no apparent reason, because they just thought they were silicone nodules. And that made the Horta angry.
Except that one that he keeps on his desk.
Exactly. He kept the one pristine silicone nodule. Which I imagine, so they say all the eggs are about to hatch soon. So I imagine that one hatched while they were underground and his desk and his lovely office are ruined.
It's It's just been because he just came through and secreted corrosive material straight through the desk.
Exactly. He wants to go right down to Mama.
That's too bad. It was a nice office. He'd done well for himself.
He did. He was doing pretty well. He had that button. It was all great, but
it's over now.
It's all over now. So the mob wants to kill the Horda. Captain Kirk says the first man that attacks the Horda gets shot with my phaser, so nobody attacks the Horda. They explain the deal with the Horda to Vandenberg. Vandenberg's like, that thing killed 50 of my men. And Captain Kirk's like, you killed thousands of his children. And he's like, what? And they explain what
happened. Like, whoa. Yeah, slow down.
That's right. Too fast.
Slow your roll, Captain. What'd you just say?
So he explains it again. And then they come to a very quick conclusion that they're going to convince the Horda, or they do convince. I guess Spock convinces the Horda that the Horda should be allowed to mine as much as they want on their own planet, mind you. Very nice of these people to let the uh-huh. Horda do whatever they want on their own planet. And the miners will basically just take all the minerals. So the Horda can make their tunnels, and the miners will basically follow after them, or uh-huh. even tell them where to make their tunnels, and then take all the precious metals out of it.
It's very generous of the miners to let the Horda act as slave labor for their mining operation.
Yes. See, this is, I think the twist is nice, that the devil in the dark is the humans, and they're the monsters all along, where the monster, like the horrific monster thing, is actually a very gentle beast.
No, he found it, Spock says he has a very logical mind. It was mm-hmm. very refreshing to interact with something like that after being around humans for so long.
Yes, and this episode ends, as many original series episodes end, with a hokey kind of joke about the Horda enjoying finding the pointed ears the most pleasing aspect of humanity, because the Horda thought the human's form was kind of repulsive. And then Captain Kirk says, oh, Spock, I think it's your vanity, and you're becoming more human every moment. And Spock says, I don't need to stand here and take this. And they play the little funny, wacky Star Trek funny music, and the episode ends.
Slide whistle, laugh track, out.
Mm-hmm. And that is The Devil in the Dark, which I think I will go down as saying I really like this episode, even though it's wacky, and it does in fact end with the native populace of this planet being slave labor. But if you overlook that part, mm-hmm. I think it's good. What did you think of this episode?
I think it's a good one. I think it it's one of the ones which having not seen original series for a while, it's definitely one of the ones that I remembered very well.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a good one. I think it you know, the whole thing about like finding a creature and then trying to make contact with it, and like that felt very kind of Next Generation-y to me, you know.
Yes.
Like feels like it kind of sets up things that will happen a lot.
Yes, and the whole kind of we don't know how to talk to you, and mm-hmm. You are very different than us, and yet even though you are different doesn't mean that you are bad, even though everybody thinks it's bad to begin with. It's good. And I think so. The original series, obviously, they're 50 years old. TV was produced in a very different way. Stories were told in a very different way 50 years ago. Pacing is very different than it is now. And I feel like this episode has pretty modern pacing, in that it doesn't have a lot of super slow moments, except for the moments probably when they're talking about Phaser Type 1 and Phaser Type 2 and drinking their coffee. Mm-hmm. I feel like that probably would have been cut out in a Next Generation telling of this. But overall, I think it moves along at a pretty fast clip. Things happen. They may be inexplicable, but they happen.
Mm-hmm.
So overall, I say thumbs up to The Devil in the Dark.
I was going to say thumbs up. Now I have to say 5 stars, 4 stars.
Oh, you downgraded it.
Well, I mean, 5 stars five stars is quite a rating.
That is a high rating.
But it's probably a 4-star episode.
I would agree. Out of 4 out of 5 stars, if we ranked things on Random Trek, which we never do.
Better than average. Well, you gave the thumbs up. I was going to say thumbs up, but that's all. I didn't have that. Or maybe it's like in the new Photos app. I can just say favorite. I favored it.
There you go. I also favored this. And I favored you, Colin. Thank you for joining me on Random Trek.
Thank you very much for having me, Scott.
The pleasure was all mine. Next on Random Trek, Voyagers, The Gift.